Hello and welcome to Graveyard Dirt, the podcast about anything and everything witchy from a practitioner and non-practitioner point of view. I'm Zoe and I'm a witch.
I'm Andrew. I'm not.
And here we are.
This is it. We're back. Mm-hmm. This is exciting.
I know. We took a quick break. Still trying to figure out our schedule.
We never had it figured out.
I know. Hence, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Still trying to figure it out. We'll figure it out eventually.
Exactly. But this is our full episode, and at the beginning of every full episode, we go over a tarot card in no particular order. Andrew gives his initial interpretation, and then I give mine as a tarot reader.
That's it.
You ready?
I'm ready. What do we have?
Today's card is the Eight of Cups. It depicts a man walking away from eight cups. The cups are arranged in such a way that it looks like one is missing. The man's turned his back on the cups and shuffles away into the mountains. The moon is in the night sky, and it illuminates the path. And it appears like he's kind of like, he's out skis.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I see 8 cups. Which one's missing? The one on by itself over there?
Yeah, it appears like it's missing. There is supposed to be 8 cups. It's the 8 cups.
Oh, it's almost like if there were 9, one would be missing, and it would be 8. I see.
It is the Eight of Cups.
I got you. Yeah, I know. It's the Eight of Cups. I counted 8 cups. I like it. It looks like he's going on an adventure.
Yeah.
I don't know what the symbolism of turning your back on 8 cups is, though. I know cups are a water thing because they hold water. So it seems like he's turning his back on that, I would think. I don't know. I got nothing. I don't know what cups mean. I'm good with, like, the major arcana. I don't know what the cups mean.
The fact that you can even tell the difference between major and minor arcana, though, I'm proud.
And he's given up on something. Or he's got something better to do.
There you go. There you go.
That's what it means.
Okay, yeah.
That's what he's doing.
So, the whole, like, it appears like one cup is missing.
Oh, he's looking for it.
This is no longer fulfilling. Something's missing. Something, like, that gap. So he's like, I'll go find it somewhere else because it's obviously not being offered to me here.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, he does have better things to do.
Yeah. The Eight of Cups also represents like disappointment, like that not feeling fulfilled. It's releasing things that no longer serve you, kind of reaching your limit, like emotionally. And then just kind of like signifying walking away from people, situations, plans. So sometimes it's like a good card and it's like, you know what? You got to just like try something else. Sometimes it can be a little bit of a tough nugget to swallow because it's like, darn, I really wanted this
to work. The thing you're doing is not working. You got to figure something else out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got that. Cool. That's cool.
You done did good.
Yeah. Yay
and
me.
And you thought you were worried because it wasn't a major arcana.
It wasn't. And I was. The theme of the episode is nuggets of knowledge.
Ooh, kind of.
Chicken nuggets of knowledge.
Ancestral veneration.
I feel like that might be a magic card. Veneration, I think, is. I don't think ancestral veneration is.
So, ancestral veneration is such a large topic. This is really going to be, like, the Cliff Notes version. And even then, it might be, like, the Cliff Notes of the Cliff Notes.
Good. I like Cliff Notes. I never actually used Cliff Notes.
No. My parents had some, like, Cliff Notes on their bookshelf, but I never did. But we had the internet.
I know. I mean the Cliff Notes on the internet.
Oh, I never really used that. Yellow and black books.
I didn't use those either.
That's what Cliff Notes are.
Gotcha. The more you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
See, I could have made a fun fact.
All right, you did. The Cliff Notes of the Cliff Notes are...
Actually, that's a lie. I think I've used Cliff Notes on a couple plays before, like some of the Shakespearean plays. But like we were supposed to read the Cliff Notes. And then we were also supposed to read the play.
Yeah. Gives you a good primer. Like this episode.
Oh, yes. Like this episode. There you go. Good job.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I'm on it.
So let's start with...
Don't leave the readers unfulfilled and longing for more, like the Eight of Cups. You got to really cover your bases with these cliff notes.
Okay. So let's start from the very beginning. What are ancestors?
Dead people.
Okay.
Previous to us.
Okay. What defines an ancestor? Because it's kind of an interesting topic.
Someone you're related to that's now dead.
Okay. So you're related to them. Is yeah. there anybody else that can be your ancestor?
Nope.
Okay.
Have you seen Mulan?
Yes.
Just like that.
Okay.
The ancestor temple.
So that's the interesting part.
So you might not need to be directly related to them, but through your family tree somehow.
Okay. Okay.
Your blood. You share blood.
Share blood.
Yeah.
That's directly related.
Yeah. Just like a part time. Like I use it and they use it. And... Mm. Yes.
Okay. So we can categorize ancestors under a plethora of things. And yes, blood ancestors are one of those things.
Yes.
Those are your parents, your grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, so on and so forth.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You got that one covered. You kind of touched on this one as well, and that would be like your lineage ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And those are not directly part of your bloodline, but so close and connected that they basically feel like they are. Think about like adoptive parents. Or, like, ancestors through marriage. So, like, your grandparents, like, your ancestors.
Are your ancestors?
Yeah. Your lineage.
Stop sharing my ancestors.
And, I mean, that would be if we chose to, like, as a family, as a married couple, connect with our ancestors. I wouldn't just be like, yo, you guys stay over there, and my people stay over here.
I don't think we've had this conversation yet. Is this something we're doing? Do we share?
We share.
Okay. Now we've had the conversation.
No, you were just going to seclude my family to one corner?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I hadn't thought of it.
Mm, well, now you know.
Now I can.
There you go. That kind of brings you into, like, the next step, which is also ancestors. Like, think about, darn, how do I explain it? Like, you know how you have aunts that you call aunt or uncle, but they're not actually your aunt or uncle?
Yes.
Like that. So you're not just going to be like, hey, you're not in my family tree. Sorry, you're on your own now. Deuces.
Okay.
You're still allowed to include them in your ancestor umbrella.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Okay, if you choose to do so.
If you choose to do so.
What if they're still alive?
Then they're just an alive person in your life that you should treat
okay
that way.
Gotcha.
Which just is an interesting thing. So, I mean, we will branch off and talk about an ancestor altar, but that is a topic about whether or not you include pictures of the living within the pictures of, like, next to the pictures of your dead.
And what do you do?
I personally keep it to just the pictures of the dead. My altars for their memories, for communicating with them. The living is living.
Gotcha.
Give them attention in other ways. This is for the dead.
Sure.
But I mean, to each their own.
Whatever they do.
Exactly.
Like the guy with the cups.
Sure. So the last topic is like of subsection of ancestors is very broad. It's like an affinity ancestor. This is saints. Spirit guides.
Because my middle name is Patrick, does that mean St. Patrick is my ancestor?
If you chose to work with St. Patrick, sure. He's shaking his head now.
I don't.
But in folk magic, let's concentrate on like Italian folk magic, you're going to have your saints. They're a part of your practice, and that can be included within your ancestral veneration practice.
Gotcha.
Then you have spirit guides, which can either be like one of your ancestors, or sometimes spirit guides are an entity of their own. Then you have land spirits, house spirits.
Cat spirits.
Yeah. Animals.
Yep.
Exactly. And those can also all be included within your ancestral veneration practice. they are different. Each subcategory is different and will play out differently mm-hmm. when you interact. But at the end of the day, ancestral veneration is the practice. Ancestors, you pick.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome. So you've chosen your ancestors that you'd like to work with, theoretically.
Someone may.
Yes.
Yes, one would. Yeah.
So you start to build your ancestor altar. This is like your home base. So we talked about altars in a past episode, I believe. I think.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
We have, because you yell at me for talking about your altars.
Yes. So your altar is like your home base. The practice of ancestral veneration is got a couple different benefits. In some cultures, it's believed that you keep your ancestors alive in another realm by like keeping their memory alive.
Mm-hmm.
Ancestors are also a great way to kind of charge your intention within spell work, manifestation, and the things that you like are praying or trying to achieve. They're kind of like a battery.
They give
that extra boost.
Sure.
Because it is a relationship. So you're creating your altar, and altars are super diverse. There's a couple different. So there's a fun idea that you shouldn't keep your ancestor altar within your bedroom, or really like any altar inside your bedroom is kind of like what they say.
Okay. Why do they say that?
Because sex. Yeah. But like, let's be honest. Spirits aren't blind. They know what you're doing.
And what if you have sex not in your bedroom?
Yes, also that. Also, what if you're closeted and, like, you can't have your altar out in the open and you can only keep it in your room? Like, there's just too many stipulations for that to be, like, hard and fast.
And it's all because of the ancestors.
Yes. What? Yes.
Yeah. You can't have your ancestor altar in your bedroom because...
Yes.
Ancestors. Tying it back into the ancestor stuff. Yes. Yeah,
ancestor
okay.
Ancestor spirits, yes.
Gotcha.
But there's just too many stipulations for that to be a hard and fast rule.
Yeah.
If that's where you can keep your altar, that's where you keep your altar.
Sure. But put it where you want it to be.
Exactly. So your ancestor altar is going to be a place where you put mementos, pictures, and then offerings. Things to think about when you leave offerings is what is the purpose of your offering, and then who are you making the offering to?
So not just like general to ancestors, but to a specific one?
Yes.
Like my dog really liked cat food. You're not going to give all of your ancestors cat food. You give it to your dog.
Well, I mean, you can put cat food on your ancestor altar. I think... it's more focusing on getting into the idea of, say, your ancestors always celebrated with the five fish dinner before Christmas. That was like their tradition. They would refuse to go to other people's houses unless they did that kind of a thing.
Sure.
You're not going to then, on Christmas Eve, give them an offering of a meat pie. And be like, yeah, but that's what I'm having.
Right.
Because that's not their tradition. That's not what...
What was that bread that you made around Halloween?
Pan de Muerte.
Yeah. That was a nice one.
Yeah, it was gummy.
Yeah, and we got to put that on the altar, too.
Exactly. Baked goods are a really great way. It depends on the ancestor that you are making the offering to. Another thing to think about is, like, perhaps you had an ancestor that struggled with addiction. You're probably not going to leave, like, vodka on the table in that sense.
Yeah.
Just because they are no longer living doesn't mean, like, you don't still respect those parts of their mm-hmm. life. It's all an energetic balance because your offerings not only are there to... nourish them in another realm and to kind of show gratitude, which they can do all those things, but it also can be an exchange. Say you're doing a spell and you're like, all right, Aunt Judy, I need your help. Like, if you can help me win this court case, I will give you X, Y, and Z. You gotta
sure.
be good.
Yep. Especially with a court case. Dang. Aunt Judy. Yeah. Oh, was she a judge?
Sure.
Yeah.
In that case, you're going to think about what kind of offering will aid you in catapulting that energy.
Right.
So it can be things like an agreement. Like, I will leave you that favorite piece of cake that you always really liked if you can help me out. It can also be things like giving them coffee or tea to really like wake them up and spark them and be like, all right, it's time to get working. I need your help. In Italian folk magic, what I find interesting is that I always thought that like saints, we were basically making them, giving them offerings and things like that because they help us. And it was like, thank you, gratitude. And that they were like a hierarchy over us. In a sense,
my words might following. Be. Yeah.
I thought that, I'm trying to think about how to explain it. Nope.
No.
No. Nope.
All right, we'll leave it
it's
as
not,
is.
It's not working. Final question.
Okay.
Say you have a really poopy ancestor.
Yeah.
Do you have to include them?
No. You get to choose. We already went over this.
Well, hey, sometimes when you got the poopy ones, it's like.
Nope. Just make sure you don't get haunted.
There you go. So that's like super cliff notes of ancestral veneration. Leave your offerings. Keep their memory alive. Show gratitude. Choose who you'd like to work with.
Yeah.
And think about what you're working on when you choose who you're working with. And it can change over time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, exactly. Like you said, maybe I'm doing a lot of court work right now. And so I'm really going to focus on my Aunt Judge Judy.
Exactly.
And then maybe a month from now, you know, she's still obviously included in my lineage. So when I make my 8 ancestral offerings of water or bread or whatever, I'm still thanking her, but my focus might change to, I don't know.
Uncle Scott.
Scott, the computer science guy.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ancestor veneration.
Nice. Any
questions?
No.
Did it make sense?
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cliff notes. There is still a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that led me to the very last itty bitty part. Book resources.
So many books. There's resources. A stack of them.
Yes, I pulled out my book resources. So what's really cool is that there are books, obviously, about ancestral veneration. Some of my favorites are Honoring Your Ancestors, A Guide to Ancestral Veneration, by, oh no, I have to say last names, Mallory Vaudois.
Yeah.
I'll have to make sure I put all of these in the description.
Yes.
I apologize to any of these authors. So that's probably like my all-time favorite. It is full of annotations. I recently pulled it off the shelf because a friend was asking about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I have a recommendation for you. And then I was like, oh, man, I need to read this again.
Yeah, this seems good.
Yeah, I love that one. Another good one is The Book of Ancestors by Claire Goodchild.
That's an easy name to say.
It is. I like how this one is set up. I like some of the graveyard history that's included in this one. This one has a little bit more history. Then there's Ancestral Tarot. by Nancy Hendrickson, and this one is cool in how it separates the different types of ancestors. So you can kind of choose like which path you want to focus on.
Nice.
And then that leads me to my final set of book recommendations, and that is that you can find information on ancestral veneration in places that aren't titled
Ancestral Veneration.
Ancestral Veneration. A really great way to immerse yourself in that is to connect with the things that your ancestors may have. And a lot of time that comes back to like folk magic. Picking up books, like for me personally, and this might not fit for everyone, I found a connection to Italian folk magic. It's something that my ancestors would have practiced or at least lived around and had an understanding of. And so Italian folk magic by Mary Grace Farun. Yep. That's an absolute favorite. Burn a Black Candle by Dee Norman is also amazing. And then you can pick up books like Doctoring the Devil by Jake Richards. Things that have those folk ties are going to have a lot about tradition. And that's a great way to just make that connection and keep that line of communication open. And then you can kind of share in some of those traditions and rituals and kind of make that bridge.
Nice. It makes sense. I like it.
So there you go. That's a lot of book recommendations that I'll have to remember to put in the description.
Good luck. That is a lot. That's six. That's a half a dozen.
All right, Mr. Short. Do you got a fact for us?
Yeah, it's a quick one.
Okay.
Are you ready?
No, hold on. Okay, I'm ready.
Nice. Do you know how many bones you have in your neck?
In my neck?
Yep. Like vertebrae.
What constitutes my neck?
Your vertebrae. The top of your shoulders 16. To the base of your skull? No, seven.
Oh.
Do you know how many bones a giraffe has in their neck? Vertebrae in their neck?
Seven.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
It's the same number. The only difference is theirs are about a foot long.
Theirs are giant. They also don't have any vocal cords.
Yeah. It's too long.
Mm.
Yep. Yeah. So giraffes and humans have the same number of vertebrae in their neck. Seven.
What about an ostrich?
I don't know. Do they even have necks? Yeah, yes, they do, because they put their heads underground. They probably have some. At least several.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Giraffes are cool.
Yeah. That means it's like this big. That's a big old bone.
Yeah.
Ours are like an inch or so.
It's terrifying. They fight with their necks.
Yeah.
They just like clunk against
each other. I would if I had a neck like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's little horns on the back of their head.
They just have like little nublets.
Yeah, they're nubby. Yep.
Giraffes are cool.
They're so cool. They're real tall.
They are.
Even the babies are pretty tall.
Those are too.
Mm-hmm.
What's their gestation?
No idea. Less than an elephant, that's for sure.
Is it?
Yeah, I think an elephant's like 24 months.
Mm. That's like a grown adult. It was a joke.
It's an elephant, first of all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. That's it. Super cool.
Thank you.
Giraffes.
Giraffes.
You're welcome.
All right, you guys. We will see you next week when we have our mini-sode, where we're going to talk about things that we're digging and things that we want to bury. Also, it's the month of December, so you might see a trend of us talking more about seasonal things.
Nope.
Yes.
Mine's going to be books.
No, I'm telling you that we're going to start theming things seasonally.
Oh.
This is your notice.
Oh, for this, for the next
odd
week. Okay, sure.
Some point, I'll have to plug grungeapothecary.com because you know you can shop there.
You just did it. Done. Check it off.
But until next time, you guys, bye.
Later, Gator.